The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I have a charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Friday edition of Pro Football Talk Live. We've got 2 hours to discuss everything that's happening in the world of the National Football League, plus whatever else we might decide to delve into. We're only 13 days away from the draft, and we're only 14 days away from the morning that Shireen Williams was having some short-term acute gastrointestinal issues that prevented her from being on the program, but she survived. Good news. And better news, she's back. Good morning, Shireen.
Feeling much, much better. That was a very, very, very long day. And pun intended, I was truly going to try to gut it out, and then it, not so much. I'm like, yeah, this probably isn't going to work. So yeah, I got a little food poisoning 2 weeks ago, but we're back feeling good today and ready to have a good show, Mike.
As I might have inartfully suggested at one point, they tried to Navalny you at the league meetings as a message to me. And it didn't work. Keep trying, NFL. You tried to take her out and you failed. I'm kidding. I hope. But yeah, there was one specific text message you sent that morning as we were getting ready for the show that was kind of graphic and also very alarming. And it's like, no, we're not going to try to do that. It might make for a very memorable moment on YouTube or social media. Might be a GIF that we could use from time to time, much like the one that we have of Chris Sims and his adventures from 4 years ago at the Scouting Combine, where he just made it off screen before something made it into a trash can. So yes, it was better that we didn't do it. And it's great that you are back. And as mentioned, we're 13 days away from the draft. I have my own short-term, it's not really a health issue. Yesterday, apparently I cut myself shaving on the chin and I didn't realize it. So I got a variety of emails ranging from, hey, you dumbass, you cut your chin and I have to see the scab on HD, right? Two, do you have basal cell carcinoma on your chin? I see a mark there, which on one hand, I appreciate the heads up. On the other hand, like, don't wish cancer on me, please. I didn't quite get the tone of the message at first. Like, hey, maybe you have cancer. Maybe you'll finally not be our problem anymore. But in my effort today to not reopen the first wound on my chin, I cut myself in another spot. I think I got the bleeding under control. I didn't quite cauterize it, but I think I have it under control and we can get through 2 hours without giving anyone else fodder to send me emails, either saying how gross you have a little blood spot on your chin, two, are you possibly in the early stages of skin cancer? So hopefully today will not entail any feedback like that. It'll just be the usual, you suck feedback that I am far more accustomed to.
I used my burner account on that, so I'm glad you didn't notice that was me, Mike.
Thanks. Well done. Well played. We Sims and I have gotten to the point where we, and I'm sure the folks in the control room love this, and, you know, Gary hasn't been producing on Fridays long enough for us to really have a chance to piss him off. But anything else that's been going on the past few weeks? I mean, this is kind of an open floor to share with us anything other than the graphic details of your illness from 2 weeks ago. Is there anything else that you just want to shoot the breeze about before we get to the news?
Well, I think we're going to get to the draft on the big happenings of the last 2 weeks. So I'll save that for the draft. But I did go to the Masters this week, so outstanding. But we'll talk about that
yes.
in the show.
Yes. The one place in the world where they – do they confiscate your phones, or do you have to like show proof that you don't have them? Do you go through a magnetometer? They actually take your phones.
I don't know what they do if you get there and have a phone. They just told us not to take our phones, so we left them in the car locked up, which, you know, you're kind of worried about that. If somebody breaks in the car, my phone's gone. Oh, my gosh. I tried to hide it in the car, and I did hide it in the car and apparently hid it well enough, and no one broke into the car, so everything was okay. But it's very strange feeling not having your phone for 8 hours in a day, and you get back. And I my over under on text messages was 100, and I would have picked the over, but it was only 81 because people don't know we communicate by text message during the day or PFT. So I expected there to be well over 100, but there were only 81. So it did not take that long to go through all the text messages. But it is a very strange feeling, Mike, not having a phone.
Monday was kind of a slow day.
Even though we grew up that way.
Yeah, well, because nobody else had them. And now everybody has them. And how can we survive without them? Right. We managed to survive without having this little box that allowed us to be in immediate communication with anyone in the world. We did survive somehow, actually dialing and speaking into a phone. And if you had something that you wanted to tell someone in writing, you had to actually write it up or type it up in an old-fashioned typewriter and put it in an envelope and put a stamp on it and mail it. Those were the options. Telephone and U.S. Postal Service or Western Union Telegram, I guess, would have been the only other way to communicate with someone far more quickly than you would by mail. So I'm curious about this Masters procedure. It sounds like it's the honor system. Like, how do they know if someone just sneaks their phone in? And are they actively looking for somebody who might be showing the telltale signs of, you know, messing with their phones because, their head's down and they're, you know, you see thumb action and they're going to throw you out if you brought in your phone. Is this just all old school honor system that everybody honors?
I think it's probably a lot of the honor system and most people honor it. We did see two people with phones. Obviously, they had snuck their phones in some way. I assume when you go through the metal detector, it detects the phone. So I don't know how you sneak in a phone, but apparently some people had managed to sneak in a phone somehow, some way. And I don't know what they do if they find the phone. I should ask a worker because it is an interesting question. If you find someone with the phone, or what if you get to the gate and you have your phone and they see that you have your phone and say you can't bring this in, if you didn't park on site, what do they do? Now there's free parking, so assuming that you could probably take it back to your car, but we got dropped off, so we wouldn't have been able to take it back to our car. So I don't know if there's a place to check it. There may be some place to check it or whatever, but it is interesting. I think most people just use the honor. It's amazing. Like, you can lease us sitting there at the Masters, go away, come back. It's still sitting there when you come back. It's just, it's an other world that we don't experience every day. Just things like that. It's weird. We found a really nice Nikon camera, because the first 3 days, practice days, you can take in digital cameras. We had to find ours, which is 110 years old. And then we had to figure out how to download the pictures. But we found this really nice Nikon camera and called the security guard over and said, hey, somebody has left this sitting here. And so they came over and picked it up and took it to Lost and Found. But, you know, no one came over in the 15 minutes we were watching the camera to see if the people came back. No one stole the camera, picked up the camera, whatever. It's just, yeah, I think it's an honor system there.
So basically what you're saying, for any of the folks out there with any criminal inclinations, the softest target in America is the Masters. you can clean up at the Masters. It's a bunch of naive, trusting people looking for $1.50 pimento cheese sandwiches. You can rob them blind. You can stand outside and say you're the person that they're supposed to give their phones to. And they're like, okay, here's your phone. And so, yes, go to the Masters if you want to make a big score. All right, now. Now's the time that we try to do the pivot to the news of the day. And I suppose the biggest news for the National Football League is the news that has transcended sport, because the activities that O.J. Simpson was allegedly involved in June of 1994 became the thing for which he is best known. And I kind of struggled with this at first, because you always want to show respect for the recently departed, primarily for their family members. You want to extend the appropriate condolences. It's a difficult time in anyone's life to go through the experience of the passing on of a loved one. But it's impossible to tell the story of O.J. Simpson without telling the story of the thing for which he is best known. For all the accolades, and he has many, from the National Football League, the bronze bust in Canton is just one of the many things he accomplished and earned through his career on the field. His work as a broadcaster, which was phenomenal, great natural charisma. Everybody loved O.J. You know, of all the people that would make that turn, if we had known it was coming and we had a chance to pick one member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame who would kill two people, he probably would have been the last name or one of the last names picked at the time. Everybody loved O.J. To have that spin the way that it did in June of 1994, and it was a riveting experience, and there, you know, are more and more people who weren't alive when any of that happened, from the murders all the way through the verdict in his trial. That is still the number one thing he's known for, Shireen. And it eventually dawned on me after wrestling with it for a few hours, because Kristen Coleman reached out and wanted to do, hey, do you want to do a video? And she's very good about prompting me, because I get caught up in everything I'm doing. Hey, do you want to do a video about O.J. Simpson passing? It's like, I kind of don't, because I really don't know what I want to say. So I needed a few hours to think it over, and I finally arrived at a very simple spot. It can't be disrespectful to talk about the murders at a time when the murderer has died. It's disrespectful to the victims to act like it never happened and to not talk about it. And look, I know there's going to be people out there who say he was acquitted. He did it. I don't care that he was acquitted. He did it. A civil jury found that he did it. And anyone with common sense that paid any attention to the trial or the excellent documentary, the 10-part documentary from 2016-17 timeframe, he did it. A jury found he did it under the lower standard in the civil context in a wrongful death lawsuit. That's the name of the specific type of case that you bring against someone who killed someone else, a family member, whoever it is that has the power of that person's estate, brings the wrongful death case. He was found liable for the killings of Ron Goldman and Nicole Brown Simpson. Nicole Brown Simpson, obviously his ex-wife, not Ron Goldman, the guy who was in the worst possible place at the worst possible time. So that's how I resolved it, Shireen. I've had a night to sleep on it, and I'm not going to pull any punches on this. The man who killed two other people died this week. That's the story. He killed them. He did it. And somehow is very easy. He had the money to go out and buy the best possible defense lawyers, who muddied the waters sufficiently to get the jury to ignore the evidence, and the prosecution botched the case. That's how he got away with it. And that's how it came to be that when he died, it wasn't behind bars.
I read several stories yesterday, Mike, and one of them was interesting. It talked about O.J. Simpson had a quote in there about he was afraid that when he died, he was going to be remembered for his Hertz commercial rather than what he did on the field. And obviously, that's not at all what he's remembered for, and is on the field, unfortunately, is not what he's remembered for either. It is, as you said, the killings of two people. And I don't know, Mike, people don't know about the Hertz commercial, obviously, a lot of people, because they weren't alive then, but it was a huge commercial. You'd run through the airport and leap over, you know, luggage and all sorts of things in the airport. It was a great commercial, and one of the most memorable commercials, I think, when we were probably growing up. But I don't know, a lot of people don't realize how big of a deal that was. It's one of those moments in your life, and there are only a few of those ever, that you remember exactly where you were when it happened. And I remember exactly where I was on the Bronco chase, the slow chase, because the Rockets were playing game 5 of the NBA Finals, and I wanted to watch the Rockets win. And you had the slow speed chase on the, you know, as the NBA Finals are playing, you also had a picture, a little inset picture of the chase. What's going to happen with OJ as he runs from the police in this slow speed chase? And if you were alive, you still remember that the driver was Al A.C. Cowlings. You don't forget that. And then, you know, take it, you remember the trial. You remember where you were when they came out with the verdict in Los Angeles. And it was a stunning, stunning verdict. And I think we all reacted probably the same way. I can't believe he got off. He got away with this. And that's kind of where we are, Mike. And unfortunately, we're not talking about what he did on the football field. And he was great. He was truly one of the greats of all time. And it was incredible. And you and I are about the same age, started to say the same age. We're 4 months apart. So you haven't had your birthday yet. But we would stay up on Monday nights to watch the halftime highlights by Howard Cosell. And you could always bet that O.J. Simpson was going to be in those halftime highlights because he was that good. He was an incredible football player on the field. And we're not talking about that today because of what happened after his football career.
Well, absolutely. And look, that's a direct product of his own choices, decisions, and actions. Whatever the excuse would have been, if he would have acknowledged that he did it and tried to fashion some defense based on temporary insanity or whatever, he didn't take responsibility. He never took responsibility. He almost took responsibility in that book, If I Did It. And the Goldman family yesterday, in issuing a statement following the passing of O.J. Simpson, mentioned both the civil verdict and If I Did It as the basis for the acknowledgement that he had killed Ron Goldman. I mean, think about how they must have felt at the time and how they have felt for the last 30 years. As I mentioned earlier, Ron Goldman in the worst possible place at the worst possible time. There was a history of brutal domestic violence between O.J. Simpson and Nicole Brown Simpson. We became aware of that in the weeks and months after the murders. Ron Goldman was the closest thing to an innocent bystander. He was bringing the glasses. Remember that part of the story? Yeah. He was bringing sunglasses to Nicole Brown Simpson, and he just happened to be there when O.J., with a knife, killed them both in a frenzied rage. And that, if you haven't seen the documentary, the 10-part documentary, I highly recommend it. I already believed he did it. It helped me understand how and why the prosecution blew it, how they didn't convert overwhelming evidence, DNA evidence that was clearly and indisputably his, connecting him. And there's no other reasonable basis to think there was anybody else who would have showed up and butchered these two people for no apparent reason. It wasn't a robbery. It wasn't a hit on Ron Goldman. There was no suggestion that anybody else out there wanted these two people to be dead. So the whole thing was a tragedy, remains a tragedy. And I've always felt badly for the Ron Goldman family because they never got justice. The only silver lining for them came from the fact that the civil verdict of $33 million, which I think I saw a quote from Fred Goldman, Ron's father, recently, that number as of a couple of years ago was up to like $90 million plus with interest because he hasn't paid it. But the thinking is he was selling his own sports memorabilia on the side so he wouldn't have to turn that money over to the court process, to Fred Goldman and the families of his victims. And that's what led to, one domino after another, that weird heist where he was trying to take back memorabilia that he believed had been stolen from him. And, you know, they do it with guns and they bust in and yada, yada, yada. He did 9 years in Nevada as a result of that. Now, there's a perception that that was payback, that that was just an effort to make sure this guy goes behind bars for some period of time because he already should be behind bars. But he got convicted through the normal court process. I doubt that everyone, you know, ignored the law, ignored their oath, ignored their duty just to make sure that O.J. Simpson finally went to jail. If the facts are what they were alleged to be, and he had the fair and full process to try to prove otherwise, he wouldn't have gone to prison if he was able to show with reasonable doubt that he was not legally guilty. So he ultimately did the 9 years, and I don't think that happens if he isn't being chased around by Fred Goldman for whatever semblance of justice you can get from trying to collect on a multi-million dollar civil verdict. Just so the guy who killed your son is reminded, and there's never a night that he doesn't go to bed, and there's never a morning that he doesn't wake up without having this massive financial liability hanging over him. I mean, I applaud Fred Goldman. He's the kind of father I'd want to have if my life was taken from me at an early age, fighting for me after I'm gone. And I'd like to think I'd be that kind of father if something like that happened to my son, that I would never, ever, ever stop seeking justice from the man that I was convinced killed him, ever. Nothing would ever stop me from doing it. And, you know, yes, the passing of O.J. Simpson creates a trauma for his family, but it reopens the wound for the families of his victims. So, again, there's going to be people who are upset about me because I'm speaking as if O.J. Simpson definitely did it. Well, hey, sorry, folks. If you want to get triggered, get triggered. He did it. And I'm not going to pull punches about it, and I'm not going to tiptoe around it. He did it, and my thoughts now have turned to the people who didn't get to live a full life and didn't get to die of natural causes because of what he did in June of 1994.
You know, Mike, you have those things where people say, who are three people that you'd love to have dinner with? And O.J. Simpson was always on my list, and people thought that was weird. But I think as a reporter and you as an attorney and a reporter, you think you're good enough that you could trick him into giving the answer that he really did it. And I always thought that I would love to have dinner with him and just start peppering him with questions and thinking that I could go, aha, you admitted it. And, you know, probably wouldn't have happened because he never did come out and say that definitively that he did do it. But I always thought that I could get that answer from him being a good questioner, Mike. And yeah, I never interviewed O.J. Simpson. He stole my pen one time as a kid. I was trying to get his autograph when he was playing with the 49ers against the Cowboys, and he stole my pen. So he's also a thief as well.
Oh, gosh. He never was prosecuted for petty larceny for stealing Shireen's pen. I vaguely remember hearing that story at some point in the past. Now, look. If you're going to give me the opportunity to have dinner with three people, I'm sorry, I'm not going to agree with you. O.J. Simpson was not making the list. I was not going to burn one of the spots on him. I want to be able to enjoy the dinner. I'm not treating this as an exercise in trying to interrogate a guy that I already know is guilty. I don't need him to confess. I already know he's guilty. So I'd have made other choices. I have a vivid recollection, and the date was December 16, 1973. That was the first full season that I was all in for the National Football League. I discovered it in December of 1972 with the Immaculate Reception, and it was December 16 of 1973 that he rushed for 200 yards, exactly 200 yards, against the New York Jets to get to 2003 for the season. And that was just a big deal. I mean, for folks who grew up when we did, O.J. Simpson was the guy. He was the star of stars in the National Football League and burned bright for, you know, 4 or 5 years. But that's a long time when you're a kid. He was the center of the NFL consciousness at the time that I first discovered it. And he was rivals with Franco Harris, rivals with Chuck Foreman in the 1975 season when Chuck Foreman had his best year and O.J. had a great year. They were going back and forth chasing Gale Sayers' single-season touchdown record. I remember that vividly. And O.J. Simpson was the guy who was established. And look, it kind of fell off quickly for him, and he ended up being traded to the San Francisco 49ers, who gave up what became the first overall pick in the draft to the Buffalo Bills, who squandered it on Tom Cousineau. That's a different story altogether. But yeah, O.J. Simpson was one of the great players of the 1970s. Short list, one of the top players of all time. But when you kill two people, that stuff tends to get obscured.
He was the juice, and he was running behind the electric company, and it was truly electric. And we should point out, Mike, that they played 14 games back then. Not 16, not 17. They played 14. He averaged 143 yards per game. So it was a pretty incredible season and a pretty incredible career for what he did. Won four rushing titles. I mean, this guy was truly one of the greatest running backs of all time. After what happened, I would have been curious, and it got them off the hook a little bit. But let's say he was convicted of murder. Would the Heisman have taken away his Heisman? And please give Reggie Bush his Heisman back. But would they have taken away the Heisman, and would the Pro Football Hall of Fame have kicked him out of the Hall of Fame if he had been convicted of those two murders? I do have that question, and I do wonder that often.
I doubt that either would have happened. They get so caught up in their rules and their bylaws and precedents and whatnot. I mean, come on, surely there are people with common sense at the Heisman Trust, and surely there are people with common sense at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And, you know, I've made this argument in the past, because the pushback is, well, if we start down that path, then who else gets taken out? And there are plenty of guys who were put in who did bad things that we knew or should have known about or could have known about if the media was like it is today, when it was back when these guys got voted in or back when they were playing and this stuff got brushed under the rug and nobody knew about it, nobody asked the tough questions, and the media wasn't swarming all over the place. I mean, look, I don't care about any of that. What I care about is in 2005, we went through the Hall of Fame and my son was 8 years old, and I had to hurry and buy the O.J. Simpson bust because I didn't want to go down the whole rabbit hole of who that is and what he did after his playing career ended. So I would have supported all along removing him from the Hall of Fame, and I suspect the Hall of Fame would have found a way to stick handle their way around not removing the bust. And part of my evidence for coming to that conclusion, Shireen, is the statement that was issued yesterday by the Hall of Fame. And look, I want to make sure anybody in Canton realizes these aren't Shireen's thoughts, because she's one of the voters. I'm not, so I can say what I want to say. Not that it would stop me anyway if I was a voter, which is one of the reasons why I'm not and never will be. But they sent out a statement yesterday with all of his accolades, mentioning his broadcasting and acting career after he was done playing, so post-playing career stuff wasn't off limits. But there was no mention whatsoever in the lengthy statement from the Pro Football Hall of Fame about the murders. And again, you don't disrespect the murderer by mentioning the murders when he dies. You disrespect the victims by failing to mention the murders when the murderer dies. Before we go to break, one last point that I want to make, just to emphasize the brilliance on the football field, and just to show the conflict that so many people are having now, especially people who grew up when we did. That 2003 yards in 14 games, I did the math and checked it twice because it didn't seem right. To equal that in a 17-game season, that rate, you need 2,432 rushing yards. Those three extra games at 143 each, they turn into 2,432. So that's never going to happen. Never going to happen, ever, in today's National Football League, unless the game all of a sudden goes back to run the ball, run the ball, run the ball, and you find somebody who is durable enough to run the ball, run the ball, run the ball to the clip of 143 yards per game for 17 games. I think it's safe to say it's not going to happen, Shireen. All right, let's go ahead and take a break. When we return, some updates regarding the Rashee Rice situation and the lingering question, when is the NFL going to do something about these 8 felony charges now pending against Rashee Rice? We'll do that next here on Pro Football Talk Live.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
When the arrest warrant was issued on Wednesday for Chiefs receiver Rashee Rice, seen here driving the Lamborghini Urus that ended up causing a six-car pileup earlier this month in Dallas, we've seen this video of the Urus, the men emerging, Rice, the second one out of the passenger seat on the front side, going over the console and getting out. There were questions who was driving that vehicle and the Corvette for several days. That's all been resolved and the charges have been filed. And as of last night, according to WFAA in Dallas and other reports, Rice turned himself in. He had 24 hours to do so. He did. Posted $40,000 bond, facing 8 felony charges. Now the process, Shireen, will move forward. And as we mentioned yesterday, he has yet to be charged for leaving the scene of an accident involving injuries. I think there are going to be more charges here. Those 8 felonies are going to expand. And if they're going to do one count for each person who was injured, based upon the math that I've done from the charges that are filed, there could ultimately be 14 total felony charges. I think 6 would be the total injuries, maybe 7. It may be 7. It could be 15 total felony charges if there's one count for each injury, him leaving the scene for each injured person. I don't know how that would work, but I get the impression what the prosecutors are trying to do is stack these up to get maximum attention and strike maximum fear into the heart of anyone who would be inclined or tempted to do what Rashee Rice was doing that day, which seems to be, with a couple of cars under his supervision, let's go out and race on the Dallas streets, regardless of who else might be on them at the time.
Mike, you're the attorney. Do you expect that this will end in a plea agreement? And how long is this thing going to play out? Because these things always seem to take a really long time before they're resolved.
Well, plea deals are often driven by, you know, serious questions about the ability of the prosecutors to secure a conviction. When you've got the video, when you've got the confession, as his lawyer Royce West indicated last week, he told authorities he was driving the Lamborghini Urus. When everything is documented by Big Brother, and we are all Big Brother with our cell phone devices, except when we're at the Masters, with our dash cam videos, we provide the evidence. We provide the trail that in past years would have been rife with reasonable doubt. Why would you do a plea deal with Rashee Rice? If your goal is to send the strongest possible message at a time when street racing is a major problem, a menace, dare I say, in Texas, causing them to pass a law last year that empowers authorities to seize and sell the cars involved in these street races. If it's that big of a deal and you have a prosecution that will be high profile, and there it was again last night. This is the second day in a row Lester Holt gets a reference on PFT Live. The NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt. There it is. The latest update on Rashee Rice. When it crosses over and becomes national news, not on sports shows, but news shows, that fulfills one of the basic goals of the criminal justice system. Deterrence. Let's seize upon a case that we can use as the brightest possible message to anyone else that might be inclined to do this in the future. That's where I think there's a chance, Shireen, they're going to throw the book at Rashee Rice. They're going to aggressively prosecute him. And if there's any lenience to be shown, it's in sentencing, not in the securing of the convictions.
It's going to be interesting, Mike. And you do wonder, going back to the OJ thing, that's when really celebrity justice came into being. The first time we were aware of it, I think, that people with fame and a lot of money can get off of things that they did, or it seems like they did. And it's the same with this case. You do wonder if people are going to, they've got to pick the jury, obviously, very carefully. And make sure that they have the right jury in this thing, because I live in Dallas-Fort Worth. It's all over the news. It doesn't matter that he plays for the Chiefs. Doesn't matter that he doesn't play for the Cowboys. This is on the news at the top of the local news every single day. It's in the headlines of the Dallas Morning News and the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. It's everywhere here. So everyone is aware of this in Dallas-Fort Worth. Everyone knows about it. Everyone knows what happened. They've seen the video. So the selection of the jury, if it does get that far, is going to be very important in this case.
There's no dream team that can be assembled to overcome the video evidence. And think about how different the Simpson case would have been. And we didn't intend to compare these two, but I think there's value in understanding how different it was in 1994 to how it is now. Today, if what happened in June of 1994 had happened today, there would be surveillance video of somebody who looks a lot like O.J. Simpson skulking around the scene of the crime from somewhere, from either a camera that was put in place post 9/11, when cameras started showing up in all sorts of public places so folks could be monitored so we avoid any type of terrorist activity, to the Ring cameras that are on people's front doors. Now, cameras are everywhere, everywhere. In 1994, they were nowhere. The only camera you had was the video camera you carried around, the big clunky thing, you know, that you put on your shoulder. I mean, it was a different world. It seems odd to us because we were, you know, adults in that different world. But with one technological advance at a time, the world has revolutionary changes that we've experienced. So the difference here is, Shireen, there will be no "if it doesn't fit, you must acquit" moment. Yeah. The video shows us everything we need to know. He's admitted he was driving the car, and he also does not have the same resources that O.J. Simpson had. This guy has 1 year of NFL football on a slotted second-round contract. He's due to make $1 million this year. If you're going to mount an aggressive defense that challenges anything and everything and tries to, he's already said he wants to do the right thing. See, he's going to throw himself on the mercy of the court and hope for lenience. And it could be, you know, when I see that aggravated assault charge, I still haven't done the research yet on how this car accident becomes aggravated assault. It could be a creative application of the laws by the prosecutor. Or it could be, let's overload the indictment to get this guy to plead guilty. It's not a plea deal. We're just going to carve out the charges we're going to take to him and say, we want you to plead guilty to these charges. And I think they're holding back the felony charges of leaving the scene of an accident, because that's the most obvious charge. They're holding that back because I think there's going to be a second wave where basically he's on the ropes and they're going to try to punch him through and get him to plead guilty. I think the goal will be to, you know, get maximum publicity, multiple news cycles, and then make it clear his only way out of this mess is to plead guilty. There's no way you're going to get an acquittal. You're going to waste all that money on lawyers. Just plead guilty and hope that your willingness to not force us to go through this process of proving you did it will get you some sort of consideration when it's time to determine the sentence.
And then, Mike, he's going to face, obviously, a civil trial because one of the husband and wife who were in the wreck have already hired an attorney, and I'm sure others in that wreck have as well. So there were six total cars. So four of the cars were were involved in that wreck. And so he's going to face the civil part of it. This is not a guy with a ton of money. This is a second round, as you pointed out, second round draft pick. And yet he had these two cars. One he was leasing, that the Lamborghinis was what, $1,800 a day that he was renting or whatever it was. And then obviously the Corvette. So he spent a lot of money, is going to have to spend a whole lot of more money on attorneys and the civil suit and everything else that goes into this. So he's not going to have a lot of money left. He better hope he can continue his career. He gets an opportunity to continue his career and get a second contract, because he's not going to have a whole lot of money after this, Mike.
Well, and you know, I haven't researched this either. And this is the way that lawyers who just don't know something say, I don't know. I haven't researched this yet. So I haven't researched the question of whether and to what extent the street racing would invalidate the insurance coverage that surely applies to that Lamborghini. Surely applies to that Lamborghini. And look, if I'm the company that owns that Lamborghini, you know, I'm bracing for a claim that there was some sort of negligence on my part in renting the car to someone who, you know, was there something that was said? Was there something that was done that should have put you on notice that he's going to race this thing? So they own the vehicle, and they're going to have an insurance policy that's going to be properly invaded by the people who were injured by this in the civil process. So this is going to be a big mess, criminal and civil process. And then we haven't even gotten to what are the Chiefs going to do? The Chiefs still haven't said a word. They won't even say we're monitoring the situation. At least the NFL will do the perfunctory, we are monitoring the situation. Chiefs have no comment. Are you serious, Clark? I mean, really, at a time when you're getting F minuses from your players, you're going to have no comment when one of your players goes back to the town where you live and creates havoc like this on the highway? You've got no comment about that at all? The only thing that anyone has said came from Mark Donovan, the team president, that said, well, at least no one was injured. At least no one was injured. Mark, I know you were focused on the election that failed at the time you said that, but people were injured by your employee. And fortunately, it didn't happen in your team's community, but it still happened. So the Chiefs, and look, I love Patrick Mahomes. I love Andy Reid. I love everything about the Chiefs are doing on the field. Once we step away from the field, what the Chiefs are doing right now doesn't quite live up to the whole Super Bowl standard that they're setting on the field. And to have nothing to say whatsoever about this, and when they do address it to get the most basic facts wrong as to whether or not somebody was even injured, fortunately no one was injured, wrong. What are they going to do? What's the NFL going to do? And that leads to the other development from yesterday that I think you posted. I know I didn't, so I know it wasn't me, but somebody posted that Teddy Knox, cornerback from SMU, who was driving the Corvette in the street race gone very, very bad, has been suspended by that program. Hey, NFL, what are you doing about this? SMU's already said, Teddy Knox, you forfeited your privilege to be a part of this team because of what you did. NFL sitting back, waiting. At a minimum, put him on paid leave, or put him on indefinite suspension without pay like you did with Mike Vick in 2007. 8 felony charges are pending against this guy right now. And look, I don't want to be an ass about it, but back to the deterrence angle. You got a lot of young guys in the NFL who have that nothing bad is going to happen to me streak, go full speed ahead, adrenaline rush, dopamine flow all the time, tempted to drive their cars too fast. You want there to be a clear message sent to every player on every team. If you mess around like this, and especially if you get somebody injured, there is going to be hell to pay. And I am stunned the NFL hasn't taken action against Rashee Rice. Maybe it'll happen at 5 o'clock Eastern today, since it is a Friday. Bad news dump time. And I know they're reluctant to create a new news cycle, Shireen. Hey, we don't need to give them another thing to talk about. It's another story on Nightly News. Sometimes it's the right thing to do, because that story on NBC Nightly News sends a message to the players, their mothers, their fathers, their family members, their anyone connected to them. They say, hey, don't do something stupid like Rashee Rice did. Look at what he did. He's turned his life upside down. When you're out there driving that fast sports car that you bought with your signing bonus, you better think twice before you punch it. You better think twice before you start weaving in and out of traffic. Look at what happened to Rashee Rice. And I'm sorry that Rashee Rice is the guy who's going to be exhibit A for everyone else in the NFL as to what not to do. But, you know, just like we said earlier with O.J. Simpson, this becomes part of your story. And it's a powerful message that can get others to conform their behavior. And I'm kind of disappointed. You know, yesterday Chris helped talk me to the point where we were like, yeah, the NFL needs to do something about this now. And after seeing what SMU did yesterday with Teddy Knox, yeah, it's already too late for the NFL. They need to do something about this now.
Yeah, it was a really easy decision for SMU, Mike. This is not a star player for SMU. He played mostly special teams last season, 11 games. It would have been a harder decision if it was the starting quarterback of SMU, possibly. And I know it's the offseason, but they did the right thing regardless of who he is, what he is. I would have been interested if he was a star player, if they would have done the same thing. I would hope that they would have done the same thing. We all know that players are treated differently depending on where they are on the food chain. And Rashee Rice is supposed to be the Chiefs' number one receiver this season. But it's the off season, and you're right. It sends a powerful message to other players. Be careful what you do out there. Don't street race. Don't do dumb things. And I just think that it's been too long that they haven't done anything. It's past time. They need to step in and do whatever they're going to do. Put him on the commissioner's exempt list. Suspend him indefinitely. Whatever you want to use. You have a ton of tools out there to use. Figure out which one to use. But he does not need to be showing up for the offseason program, period, end of story.
Excuses are made for the stars. Examples are made of the scrubs. It's a tale as old as time in every sport at every level. If you are good enough, we will find a way to look the other way on that thing you did. If you're not good enough, then you become the guy that we use to look righteous because we're going to do the right thing. And it's baloney, and we all see through it, and it never changes. The offseason program opens for the Chiefs on Monday. And 5 years ago, and yes, it's already been 5 years ago, there was a cloud that emerged about Tyreek Hill just before the draft. It was enough to get them to use a second-round pick on Mecole Hardman, the ostensible replacement for Tyreek Hill, where his son had a broken arm and nobody knew how it happened, and they were investigating Tyreek Hill for that. At that point, Hill and the Chiefs agreed he would stay away from the rest of the offseason program. So I'm going to be extremely disappointed in the defending Super Bowl champions, the two-time defending Super Bowl champions, the current platinum standard for on-field excellence in the National Football League, if Rashee Rice is at off-season workouts. And they're not going to be able to stay quiet if they have any media availability next week, along with the start of off-season workouts, because anybody there is going to want to ask about Rashee Rice. And I guarantee you, it isn't just going to be sports reporters there. It's going to be some correspondence from NBC and ABC and CBS and everybody else that has a national news operation. They're going to want questions, and this is an occasion to get them as to what the Chiefs are going to do about Rashee Rice. So if they're smart, they'll do whatever they're going to do before they have to answer questions about why they haven't done anything yet. So that's my prediction. By Monday, somebody's doing something. And my guess is he's not going to be at the offseason workouts when the Chiefs get rolling on Monday. And if he is, man, they're going to open themselves up to a lot more criticism than they've already received. All right, let's take a break. When we return, Vikings GM Kwesi Adofo-Mensah spoke yesterday on their plans at quarterback in the draft. Everybody knows they want one, which kind of complicates the effort to get the one you want without having to give up too much. We'll hear from Kwesi next and give our thoughts. It's Friday, it's PFT Live, and we'll be right back.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well...
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.